hands-on with the Samsung Galaxy S21, CES 2021 wrap-up, Google speakers get a guest mode, plus your tech questions answered. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMuro, and this is Rich on Tech, the podcast where I talk about the tech stuff I think you should know about. It's also where I answer the questions that you send me. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles, back from the Seattle area and CES 2021. All digital this year. If you follow me on social media, yeah, you're kind of up to speed on everything that was going on there. We did the show from up at the Microsoft Studios just outside Seattle in Redmond. Beautiful, beautiful area. I really fell in love with the area up there. Now, I used to live up there for about a year. I lived in Yakima, Washington. And so I was familiar with the Pacific Northwest. I remember it just being absolutely beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Clean, fresh air. I mean, it was just, I took a run on this path that was behind the hotel, and it like rivaled any run I've taken anywhere in America because it was just so beautiful. And it wasn't even anything. I mean, it was just like a run along a river, but really, really nice. CES 2021, all digital. Like I said, a little bit different this year. I was a host of the digital, I guess you call it the live anchor desk. So we kind of like introed the different, you know, keynotes and, you know, not like, well, I don't know. It's just like basically like a newscast, but for CES. So we were talking, you know, just kind of keeping everything moving. And I thought it was really cool. It was very different. I think that the all digital CES format worked, but I think that people, you know, they enjoyed the break this year, but I think that people will be ready for going back to Vegas next year, and it will be in Vegas next year. I believe the dates are January 5th through 8th, but don't quote me on that. And if you're a journalist, you have to go for like 3 days before and 3 days after anyway. That's what happens to me. But it was really fun. My co-host was iJustine. She is awesome. I literally, no joke, just tried to pick her brain all week long. So I'd ask her, you know, what's your favorite app for the iPhone? How do you do this on social media? How do you do that? How do you deal with this when it comes to your followers? Like, I just wanted to know, like, this is a person that I didn't even realize how many followers she has, but let's see. So on Twitter, she's got 1.7 million followers. On YouTube, 6.83 million. Let's see on Instagram. And on Instagram, 1.7 million. So across all those social media platforms, I mean, it's pretty amazing to have that many followers across all three platforms, because if you look at a lot of like the YouTubers specifically, they'll amass this large following on YouTube, but they might not be as good at getting folks to follow them on like Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, I should say. So for her to get the trifecta there of millions on across all three is pretty, pretty amazing. And when she tweets stuff or Instagram stuff, it just goes everywhere. I mean, it's pretty wild to watch. And she is always working. She's very smart. And it was interesting when she said to me that she sees herself as a mini startup. And I thought that was so interesting, because I always wondered how, you know, these entrepreneurs think of themselves. And she is right on the money. So Justine, thank you. She probably doesn't listen to this podcast, but anyway, it was really fun to work with her. And we also had Brian Tong, who obviously is a good friend of mine, and Naomi Kyle, who I did not know, but I got to know a little bit, not too much, because we, you know, with COVID, they tried to keep us as separate as possible. So they had to follow all these precautions, and it was very, very buttoned up production. I was super duper impressed. I wasn't really sure what to expect, but I have to say, everyone from the Consumer Technology Association that puts on CES, you know, they had a bunch of people up there, to the actual folks that produced the show, to the Microsoft Studios folks. I mean, it was really, really an amazing experience. I am so glad that I was a part of it. And we're going to talk about some of the things in CES. I'm going to start with the Samsung Galaxy S21, then I'll go back to CES. But real quick, I just, you know, want to talk about, because it was my first time flying and traveling in 9 months since last March. I mean, that was the last, basically February was the end of February was the last time I traveled last year. So was it weird? Yes. Did it feel really cool? Yes. Was I very excited? Yes. Everything felt great. I did not feel like I was at risk for COVID at any point in the trip. The airport, not on the LA end, but on the Seattle end, was quite busy. But again, I was not close to people. And on my flights, I was not really close to people. I did have to sit next to someone on the way out there. On the way back, the plane was totally empty. And overall, I mean, you know, I wore my N95 mask on the plane, and, you know, it was great. I mean, it's sad that the state of the, you know, what state of the world we're in right now when it comes to that. But I think that it made me realize that, no, I don't want to do this a lot, but of course I will do it for work. And, you know, you just have to remain, vigilant about protecting yourself, you know, just taking the proper precautions and just being aware of your surroundings and what you're doing, and especially touching your face and all that stuff. And, you know, when I was taking the car from the studio to the hotel, you know, I told the guy, I said, look, I'm opening the window because that's what I'm supposed to do and get some fresh air in here. And the driver, they understand. Everyone's in this together. So it was a great experience. I had a blast. I hope they do something similar for 2022. And I hope that I'm on the short list for someone that might be considered to help out again. So thank you, CES and CTA. You guys were fantastic. All right, let's start with the device that I came home to, and I was very, very much excited for this, the Samsung Galaxy S21. Samsung sent over the S21 and the S21 Ultra, so the lowest end and the highest end, and I've been playing with these. I'm not at liberty to give my full review just yet because, well, let's be honest, it's only been like a couple hours, but I can give you my first impressions, kind of the unboxing. And from what I've seen, this is kind of a nice device. I mean, it reminds me of the Note. I love the Note 20. It was just too big for me. This one is a little bit easier to manage in my hand, even though it's still a nice big screen, 6.8-inch screen. I'm talking about the Ultra here. It's got four cameras on the back. It's got an Ultra. It's got a wide. It's got a 10 times optical telephoto lens, which is just amazing. I mean, 10 times on a smartphone is for optical is just phenomenal. I love that. Then it also has a 3x telephoto lens. So four lenses on this, along with laser autofocus and the things that it ditches this year, which I was surprised, there's no charger in the box, which is fine. I have plenty of chargers. I don't need to get another charger just sitting around my house. And I think that a majority of people feel the same way. The other thing, though, that did surprise me is that they got rid of the SD card slot. So there's no more micro SD cards expandable storage on any of these devices, which, you know, some people, that was a big differentiator with the Samsungs, and the fact that you could just buy the standard model and just pump up the memory with a card was really cool. You can no longer do that. The other thing that they got rid of is the little antenna that enabled Samsung Pay to work in places that the other phones didn't work. The other Androids and the Apple iPhone, they had a special antenna inside the Samsung devices called MST. And this antenna would basically recreate the magnetic field from the stripe on the back of your credit card and sort of emit that out to any card reader anywhere. So this is why you could use tap to pay at Walmart, even though they don't accept it, because the Samsung would actually emit, it kind of mimicked what a credit card would do, and it kind of faked out the machines. Well, they got rid of that. So the competitive edge for Samsung Pay is now gone. And that's kind of a big deal. But otherwise, this phone is 100% loaded. You can just feel the quality of this device. It feels really nice in your hand. The screen looks amazing. It's got all the things that you need, minus those two little things that they took a step back on. One thing that I really liked that they did was they added the Google Discover feed to the left of my home screen, which is just amazing for the launcher. So now when I swipe to the right, swipe to the right, it brings up all that Google Discover stuff, which I've loved forever, like all the stories that it wants you to read and all that stuff. So that's a huge, huge plus for me because I did not like the Bixby stuff, so I would just turn it off. And, otherwise, there's other improvements that are small things that are really cool. It's got a 5,000 milliamp battery. Of course, it had wireless charging. It's got the, IP68 water resistance. The price, it starts at $1,200, which is $200 less than last year. So that's a pro right now during this economy where, you know, it's been rough on a lot of folks. let's see, it's, they all have 8K video recording. And because you're recording 8K, they say you can pull a full resolution picture out of your video. So, you know, sometimes you take a video and it's like, it doesn't look very good if you try to get a screenshot out of that, but this will look just as good as a regular picture. I haven't tried that yet, but I can't wait to try that. You know, of course, they always say that night mode is better and all these, the pictures are better, but I'll be the judge of that. And I will be testing this out over the next couple of weeks to see just how much better. You can also use a stylus now with the S21 Ultra only. The other two models, you cannot use a stylus, but the S21 Ultra, you can use a stylus, whether you buy a new one or you buy, or maybe you have a stylus from an old Note. That will work as well. So that's kind of cool. The other thing that's neat is that when you share a picture through their gallery, it will ask you if you want to get rid of the location data. Oh, it's off by default, which is really nice. So that is a huge, huge thing for privacy. I love that. Let's see, what else? 8K video. Oh, the it still does 100 times zoom with you know, their hybrid zoom system, but they've steadied it out. So when you zoom in really far, it stays steady. And I will, again, I got a little bit of hands-on time with that last night, and it looks promising. It looks way better than the first model, but I'll have to see what the deal is with that. And then they have another cool feature called Director's View, which I personally really love. I'll be shooting a lot of videos like that where you can see, you can choose the two camera angles that you want. So you can choose to have, you know, like you can see yourself in the selfie camera, but also be shooting the other cameras as well. And can you change them live? Oh, yes, you can. Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. So that's a neat little feature as well. And oh, you can change it to split view. So it's kind of the picture or the it's kind of the feature that they have on the iPhone with the double take app, but now that's built into the latest Samsung devices. So overall, if you want the Samsung S21 or S21 Plus, those start at, let's see, how much do those start at? Those start at $799. And then, so the S21 is $800. The S21 Plus is $1,000. And then the S21 Ultra is $1,200. And the memory is silver, comes in 12 gigs of RAM plus 128 gigs of storage, which you're going to eat through that with 8K video in minutes. Phantom Black, 12 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage, or 256, 12 gigs of RAM, or you can get a 512 gigabyte model with 16 gigs of RAM. They also have exclusive colors on Samsung.com, including Phantom Titanium, Phantom Navy, and Phantom Brown. That's for the S21 Ultra. The S21 and S21 Plus, they come in a couple of different colors, more fun colors, Phantom Violet, Gray, Pink, White, and Silver and Black for the S21 Plus. So anyway, and then gold and platinum. So there's a lot of different, there's a whole matrix of colors and things, but these companies are really funny about how they only give you certain offerings with, there's only certain combinations available. You can't just say, oh, I want gold in 1256. You can't do that. You have to kind of pick and choose based on the model number you're getting and the color you're getting. But I would recommend, if you are going to purchase one of these, to get the highest storage you can, because you cannot expand it. And that is kind of like the big thing that you need to know about these right now. All right. So if you want to see some videos on those, I posted one to my Facebook. I did a live unboxing there. And then on my Instagram, I did a video kind of running through the features and the look of the phone. That's at Rich on Tech on both of those platforms. So I'm digging this phone so far. I have high hopes for it. I don't know. I told you I might switch, and I might be tempted. If the camera is good, I might be tempted, because I'm ready for a little Google in my life again. When you're on the iPhone, you get way away from Google products and services because they try to, you know, kind of fight those at all turns. But I'm kind of ready for that integrated experience of like everything kind of working together with Google on the iPhone. I haven't had that in a while, on the Samsung, because I've been using iPhone for so long now that I'm kind of ready to go back and just see what the other side is like just for a little bit, because, you know, it helps me as a tech person to get to understand both sides. And I've done that historically. So we'll see. Stay tuned. I'll have my full roundup and review of the S21 lineup very, very soon. All right, let's get to our first question. As you can see, I have all my stuff back up and running. Last week was a, you know, from the hotel room kind of podcast, which was great. I used the Tula microphone, which I'm not sure if I said or not, but I've been testing that out. And I thought it sounded pretty darn good for being in a hotel room. But we're back this week. All right, Kathleen says, I'm trying to find a password generator for personal use. Any suggestions? What is your opinion on Keeper? Heard it was top rated. Thought I would ask you. You haven't steered me wrong in the past. Keep up the great work. You are my go-to tech guy. Thanks, Kathleen. So Keeper, who is Keeper? I don't know Keeper. I mean, I've seen them, but I don't know what their deal is. When I think of the password managers, the number one, the number three come to mind. I'll tell you what they are. Dashlane, LastPass, and 1Password. And that's 1Password with a one and then password. Those are the three that I would use. And I would just, you have to get into a groove with these things. There's no way around it. You just have to get into a groove. So pick one, stick to it, put all your passwords in there, start using it to generate passwords, and do not stray. The problem when you stray is when you use it half the time, it doesn't work. You need to use this 100% of the time. You need to install it on all your devices. And the way that most of these password managers work is they all say, oh, we're free, 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 free. And you go, oh, cool, I'll use you for free. And then when you really get down to the nitty gritty of them, here's how they're free. They're free to use on one device. And then when you start using them on other devices, it can get very expensive. So for instance, LastPass seems to be free across all the devices, but there's got to be a catch to that. You know, it doesn't seem like there is a catch. So LastPass, if you want totally, totally free and across all your devices, go LastPass. 1Password, let's see what's going on there. 1Password used to be primarily iPhone. Now it's Android and iPhone, but it is personal. A personal account is $3 a month, billed annually. So that's 12 times 3 is $36 for the year. And the family account, which you probably want because you want your, you know, significant other to be using this as well, that is $5 a month for a family of five. And you can get that billed annually, where it has to be billed annually. So that's $60 a year. Then Dashlane. Dashlane is a little trickier to find the pricing. Let me see. Plans, individual, they've got free, but here's the thing. On free, you only get up to 50 passwords and one device. So if you want to be able to easily, you know, use these passwords on your laptop, you want to pay. And they're the most expensive, it seems, because it's $650 a month times 12 for the premium. So $650 times 12 is $78. So that's $78 for the year. Family is $9 a month. So, I mean, and you get a VPN as well with Dashlane. I'm not sure if the other ones offer a VPN included. But, you know, just look at these different devices or these different software solutions and see which one works for you. If you are 100% Apple or 100% Android and Google, you can use what they have built-in password management in those two operating systems. So with Apple, it's Keychain, and it works pretty well. But again, you're locked into the Apple ecosystem. If you only use Apple products, I'd go with that. And then on the Android or Google / side of things, you would have to use Chrome along with Android. Great question. All right, let's get back to CES. So CES 2021, again, all digital show. We did the show out of the studios in Redmond, and it was different this year because it was all digital. And so you had to sort of go off of, you know, the videos that they released, which they did a great job of organizing things. In fact, I mean, I don't want to say that this was easier to cover this year than in previous years, but it kind of was. The difference, the biggest difference is that you just didn't get to go hands-on with these gadgets. And let's be honest, that is the beauty of CES, is actually getting to see these things in the flesh, in person, and getting to play with them before anyone else. So with that said, here are some of the highlights of the show. My takeaway is that a lot of this stuff was COVID related. It was touchless. It was big picture, autonomous cars, TVs. I would say actually TVs took a back seat this year because usually the TVs wow us because you can see them. But, you know, without being there and seeing these giant screens, it, you know, the TVs did not steal the show this year. But with that said, let me go through a couple things that caught my eye. TCL, they showed off like a concept phone screen that you kind of stretch out that becomes bigger, which I thought was kind of cool. Obviously, prototype-y. They also showed off a 17-inch screen that rolls out like a scroll, which is kind of cool. Samsung showed off these things, these bots. There's a Bot Care and then Handy Bot. And these are robots for your house. The Handy Bot was kind of, you know, the robot that you want in your home, you know, cleaning up after you, getting you a glass of wine, pouring a glass of water, picking up your clothes. But again, these are things that we're probably not going to see anytime soon. Their robotic vacuum that Samsung unveiled was pretty cool because it uses AI to avoid things like cables. I know my Roomba eats up cables all the time and little objects, and it gets smarter as it goes along because it has AI. So that's pretty cool. Let's see what else here. This was pretty cool. The Indy Autonomous Challenge. This is like a race at the Indy 500 that will use autonomous race cars. And there's like a $1 million prize. Little things like J-Labs, J-Buds, frames. These are... a lot of people really like those Bose sunglass speakers. I forget what they're called, but they're like basically sunglasses with Bose little speakers and Bluetooth built in so you can listen to your music and take calls. Well, JLab has a way to turn any glasses into that with these $50 frames, they call them. You just pop them on the side of your pair of glasses and now you've got connected glasses. And let's see, Justine really liked when I told her about the smart pepper spray. This is from Sabre. And when you spray this pepper spray, it automatically notifies the police with your GPS coordinates and also some trusted contacts. So that's, you know, it's like everything is connected. All right, let's see what else do we see. LG teased a rollable phone just like TCL. The thing that stole all the publicity is this cold snap ice cream machine that's kind of like a K-cup for ice cream. Now, this is an example of something that I would have to try out because if you were at CES, they would be making you this ice cream and you try it and you'd see how awesome it is. We only got to see a video and of course it looks really cool, but I will tell you this, when I did a story with a company that was making frozen yogurt this same way, let me see, I'm typing in frozen yogurt, KTLA, DeMuro, and here it is. It was a frozen yogurt gadget. This was in 2017, and it's very similar. And it was called the WIM is the startup. WIM frozen yogurt. So let's see if they're even around. And no, let's see, are they? I don't know if they're still around. August 27th was the last post. It doesn't, maybe they are. I don't really see any place to buy it. So, August 2019 was their last post. So yeah, again, didn't really probably work out as well as they thought it would. And I have a feeling that this may be the same, but who knows if it's good, it's $500 and it's basically a Keurig. I don't know if it's probably not from the same company, but it's called Cold Snap. And you know, it's cool, but I had my memory of the one that I tested and it was not very good. But I think if this is like able to partner with some of these big companies that make ice cream and make it at home, I mean, that's pretty cool. Oh, this was cool at Samsung. They're in their 2021 TVs, instead of using batteries, they're making them solar and the solar panel works inside. So your remote is always powered by solar and that's way less, you know, batteries to replace. Not like you have to replace batteries a lot, but it's less batteries that go in the landfill, which is pretty cool. The other two things that got all the attention was this smart pet door from MyQ. It's like $3,000 though. It uses like a little Bluetooth tag on your pet to, you know, so they can open the door, but nothing else does, which that's going to be limited. But in the future, of course, everyone's going to have that, you know, when they build these things into homes, they're going to be a lot cheaper. And then Toto, they make the toilets. I feel like they've been trying to really capture America's attention for a while now with their different toilet technology. And I'm not sure that they've had one breakthrough thing, but now they will, let's just say, examine what comes out and, you know, tell you some feedback on that. Like, you know, if you're healthy or not. I don't know. That's kind of weird. But, you know, again, it's one of those things that sounds really weird right now, but I fully imagine every toilet in the future to be smart and give us feedback on exactly what's going on. All right, next question here comes from Nancy. She says, I'm looking for a place to shred my personal documents. I would like to watch them being shredded and not just drop them off to a locked box. Do you know of any place or event where I can do this? From Nancy. Nancy, this is funny you say this because I literally just did this in my neighborhood a couple of weeks ago. I was driving home and from time to time I see in the park a shredding truck. And I go, oh, that's cool. So I can just bring my stuff there to get shredded. Because I had an experience where I brought my stuff to the UPS store, formerly Mailboxes, etc., if you remember that name. And I brought my stuff there and I said, you know, they said they have shredding services. And I said, okay, cool. So I go there, they weigh my stuff, you know, whatever it was, a couple pounds. I pay the $15 and they dump it into this lockbox. And I was like, oh, wait, you don't actually shred it? And he said, no, the company comes and shreds it. I said, oh, because think about it. There is room for error there. You know, maybe someone doesn't lock up the box, or maybe, you know, the box gets unlocked somehow, or maybe the papers fall out. I don't know. So after that experience, I really wanted to go somewhere where they shred it in front of me. And so the van that I found in my neighborhood, they do it, you know, every, I don't know, twice a year or something, where you can bring your stuff. I brought my stuff and I said, hey, here it is. And it was just a tiny amount of stuff. It was, you know, a couple pounds. And they said, oh, normally it's, you know, I think it was like $50 for everything you have, which is great if you have like a giant office full of stuff. But I think she let me off at like $20 or something. But it was great. And I watched it being shredded in person. I mean, I could see the camera shredding. They had a little camera inside the truck that you can watch your stuff being shredded, which was really, really cool. And so that's what I would recommend. I would look into shredding events in your neighborhood. I'm not sure where you live, but just, you know, Google your neighborhood and, you know, shredding event and see what comes up. And usually, you know, a couple times a year, they'll do these things. And be prepared to pay a nominal amount for that. The other thing to do is just look on Yelp and look up shredding services and just be, you know, be critical in looking up these services and see which ones actually shred on site. So you want to say in person, on site shredding, and then call them up and confirm that when you bring your stuff there, you will watch them shred your stuff right in front of you. Very, very cool. And good point. You want to shred this stuff because you do not want, you know, we're not getting as much paper as we used to, but at the same time, you want to shred it because you don't want to just throw this stuff in your trash can and who knows what happens to it after that. All right, now, I think, are these the touch tones? Yes. All right, so we've got the pod page voicemails, which you can find at richontech.tv/podcast. richontech.tv/podcast, and look in the lower right-hand corner, and you will see that there is a microphone, and when you tap that mic, you can leave me a voicemail just like Scott did.
Yeah, g'day, Rich. Scott from Sydney, Australia here. Just wanted to thank you for such an awesome podcast, which I found out about from Brian Tong when you were on his show a few months ago. Really enjoy your podcast. I listen to it every single week, and I really enjoy the news items you present, and I really enjoy listening to all the questions that the listeners send in. I was wondering whether you could think about maybe extending the podcast by 30 minutes, so it's an hour and a half. I really like your podcast a lot, and an hour and a half would be great because you could answer more questions and people could post their questions and things like that. So just wanted to thank you again for such a great podcast. Keep up the awesome work, and I wanted to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Great question. And Happy New Year to you. That was received a couple weeks ago maybe. But okay, so here is the deal. Well, thanks. First off, I had no idea I had anyone listening in Australia. So that's really, really cool. So thanks for listening all the way over there. I do appreciate you and your enthusiasm for the show. But oh my gosh, do people really want to hear me go on for that long? So I kind of do this podcast the way that I think about podcasts. And when I see an hour and a half show or a 2 hour show or a 3 hour show, I just go, oh my gosh, I can't begin to completely finish that podcast. So for me, the time of this podcast has gently creeped up over, you know, the past couple of months. I try to keep it to about 55 minutes because I feel like that's just under an hour. It doesn't feel as intimidating as that over the post hour mark. So that's my feeling. And I totally agree. I would love to get to more questions every week and do that. But, you know, it's more intimidating. And it's also a time thing for me because it does take some prep work to do this show. And, you know, by extending it a half an hour, it would take even more prep work. So, you know, I have to get everything ready and, you know, I do this on my own. So I like it. I like the suggestion and I do appreciate you. I love the fact that you want to listen to more. I really do. And, you know, I will see if maybe in 2021 I decide to extend it. If you think that that's a good idea, let me know. But, you know, right now I'm keeping the show at about an hour, a little bit less. And I think that's where it's going to stay for now, but I'm totally open to doing more. I mean, I love talking. I love doing this show. And so if I could do this show every day, I would. If it fit into my schedule, if this has been my goal, if I could do a 1 hour live call-in show every single day, maybe, you know, Monday through Friday, I would do it because you just hear the podcast once a week where I kind of curate the questions that I get from folks, but they come in fast and furious on all platforms all day long. I mean, what I do on a daily basis is I just sit there on Instagram or you know, YouTube, or not YouTube, Facebook, I barely respond to, but the amount of questions that are in my comments, that are in my DMs, that are replies to my stories, that are on my Twitter, it's pretty phenomenal. And the just how many questions are out there is amazing because when you think we've answered them over and over and over, it's like you really haven't because there's so many people in this world and they all want to know like what the deal is. And so I again, that would be my goal if I had a way to like know it. Every day at 3 p.m. I could sit down and do an hour show. It'd be great. So, but I'm not at that place in my life, which I wish I was, but I'm just not. All right. You know, my number one goal in this world is to do my stories for KTLA. Those are my 100% priority because that is my job. And so all this other stuff that I do, the podcast is part of KTLA, but you know, we do an hour a week. That's kind of the deal. So I would do more. But it's tough because anytime I do more things, it takes away from my KTLA time. And believe me, KTLA takes a long time. I put a lot of work into my stories for that station. All right, let's talk more about CES. I did a segment on pandemic gadgets at CES, and pandemic stuff was very apparent at this year's CES, which is so wild because when you go to CES, they always have all these booths with like, you know, health and wellness stuff that you just kind of ignore. And this year, no, nobody ignored it. Like masks and air purifiers and all that kind of stuff was very popular. So let me go over some of the things that caught my eye. The LG keynote, they showed this thing called the PuraCare wearable air purifier. This is a smart mask that has a rechargeable battery that cleans the air that you breathe in and out for up to 8 hours. They haven't said if it's going to be available in the US, but it looked like it would be really cool to have. But as someone who wore an N95 mask on the plane for 2 hours there and back to Seattle, that's pretty tight on your face and it doesn't feel heavy, but it feels tight. And so I imagine that this would probably feel a combination of those two things. And with masks, you know, there is mask fatigue the longer you wear these things. And so I'd be curious about that. But at the same time, it's kind of a cool idea. Then there's something called the Mask Phone, F-O-N-E. This is a mask that has built-in earbuds. So you can, you know, make a phone call with Bluetooth and you don't have to like lift or, you know, people can hear you. It's just it's two in one. Then, of course, the touchless tech is everywhere. So Arlo is making a touchless video doorbell, which I just think this is wild. The doorbell, when you approach it, uses a proximity sensor to recognize you. And it makes an audible chime. So it's like doo-doo-doo, or whatever. I don't know what the sound is, but it kind of like, so you're like, oh, wait, hold on. This thing is doing something. And then it rings itself. So you don't have to touch it. And it gives you like a visible thing that you know that it's been pressed. And then Kohler, you know, they make all the water faucets and stuff. They're bringing, you know, we've seen touchless in corporate settings forever, and even the kitchen, but now they're bringing it to the bathroom. So they will have a single faucet that's touchless, and which is great for families, you know, I mean, as long as it works well, you know, because sometimes those bathroom ones at the airport and stuff can be kind of annoying, like they don't necessarily work all the time. And also getting the water to run for a longer period, but you know, they're doing that, which is great because, you know, the less you touch, hopefully the less, you know, stuff that's getting moved around. And they're also making a retrofit kit. So you can turn any recent single control Kohler bathroom faucet touchless. Then you've got Targus. They are making a UVC light for your desk. It sits kind of on top of your keyboard. And at the end of every hour, it just goes to town and sanitizes your desk for 5 minutes. And it has a little motion sensor so that if someone's around, it's not going to trigger because UV light is not good for your eyes. And then this one's kind of cool. This, I don't know if you've seen all these airports and stuff. They always show that shot of the person like using some sort of fogger to like deep clean the areas and disinfect everything. Well, that's of course filled with chemicals, but Skosh, they make a lot of these devices for your car, these accessories. They have the Magic Fogger. This is a portable antibacterial sanitizer, and the mist is organic, and they say it's 100 times stronger than bleach, but organic and safe for humans, animals, and the environment. And I do believe that because I saw a pitch on a story about this stuff that like literally takes, I think it's regular water and maybe like a tablespoon of vinegar or something, and like turns it into like a disinfectant, and it like somehow charges it up, or I don't know, but it seemed pretty cool. And so I think that's working along the same lines. Let's get to another question. Let's see. Doreen says, Rich, have you done a segment on the RFID blocking cards that you put in your wallet and it protects all the cards in your wallet? There's so many different ones. I don't want to get them and want to get them for the whole family, but don't want to waste my money on something that doesn't work to protect us. Thank you for all your help in the past, Doreen. So again, this is really funny because this is, again, the kind of thing I saw this product at CES, no joke, 5 years ago it had to be. And now, just recently, we've seen a lot of people concerned about RFID. So I will tell you, do I think you necessarily need this? Probably not. I don't hear a lot of instances where people are getting hacked through their credit card with RFID stealers, but it could happen. And if you are going to buy one of these things, the ones that I like are from a company called Silent Pocket. We interviewed them for the news, met the guy, and it was great. I mean, this is the guy that I talked to at CES like 5 years ago, and nobody cared about my story when I posted it to social media. And now, of course, you know, privacy is so big, people care about this stuff. And so great, you know, I was just a little ahead of the curve there. But they make pockets for your phone, for your tablet, your laptop, your keys, accessories, you know, like wallets. I mean, they make everything, everything. So if you want RFID protection, you look at Silent Pocket. And they have a card sleeve, a 5-pack, I think this is what you're talking about, for $15. Or you can get a wallet for $20. Or you can get a lunch money pouch for $20. Or a, you know, all these things. They've got them all over their website. Again, it's called Silent Pocket. And if you want an RFID blocker, then go with them and, you know, see what you need. I have a card with RFID. I've got a card. My credit card has RFID on it. And honestly, it doesn't work. It somehow got deactivated because I've wanted to use it for tap to pay when my phone is either, you know, I don't have my phone with me, or I don't know, just some random reasons. And it does not work. So I don't know what the problem is. Maybe I need a new credit card that has it, but it's fine. I just don't use it. But anyway, that's the deal with RFID. Good question. And, thanks for asking. All right, richontech.tv/podcast. Here is another question.
Hey, Rich. My name is Luis from Whittier. My question is, what are your thoughts about the changes coming to the Google-based apps, like Google Pay needing to download a whole new app instead of updating, or even like Google Photos stopping their free storage this year? Are there any other Google app changes that we should know about in the coming year? Thanks for hearing me out. Love the podcast and been a longtime fan. Happy New Year.
Good question. And oh my gosh, wow. You kind of stumbled upon a loaded question here because, you know, when you think about these Google products, the number one thing is that Google is all over the place. They have really killed it with search, but and YouTube. But other than that, almost every product that they come out with is kind of a mixed bag. And Google Photos, I would argue, is probably the okay. So you've got Google Search, Gmail, YouTube, and Google Photos. I think those are probably, and obviously they're ad offerings, but you know, those are probably the four most popular consumer Google products. I guess Android.
I didn't understand.
Oh wow, Google is talking to me. That really shook me up there. Woo. I accomplished a personal goal in my home where I've always wanted all of the smart speakers lined up together so that I can ask them the same thing and see how they respond. So I've got the HomePod Mini, the one from Amazon, which I won't say the name because she triggers very quickly, and the Google one. And I love it because you can ask the same thing and just see how they respond. And it's like so good for me as a tech person to like see the nuances with these various devices. So anyway, I digress. But the Google Pay thing, I would give you more thoughts on that, but literally I can't log in. I have tried and tried and tried. Something's wrong with my Google account. I cannot log into Google Pay with the new app. I don't know what the problem is. And I have no idea how to fix that. I think Google Pay is cool. But again, it's like this all over the place thing. It's like, oh, let's get into payment apps because everyone else is. Venmo's popular. And Google Photos. It's like they promised all this free storage. And it's like now they're changing that. And I think that Google should have kept the free storage for people that are giving up the quality on their photos. I mean, this is a huge company. I get it. They probably underestimated the popularity and just how much people would throw in there. But at the same time, you kind of started along those lines and then you switch gears and it really does not build a lot of confidence in people. So that's just not right. And it's like this with everything with Google. They just kind of, they're all over the place. And Google Maps has been pretty consistent. But again, even with something like Google Maps, you know, they're trying to be Yelp in Google Maps. And, you know, 99% of people probably don't use Google Maps for the ratings and reviews and all that stuff. But again, they have all these different things in there that they just try to, you know, throw in and, you know, build into their apps. It's like if they get a popular app, they just try to change as much as possible to piggyback off that popularity in different ways. And I just think that they need to stick to what they're doing, you know, really focus on the users and the user experience and what do users like about that app and don't change it. And in fact, just continue to make it better. And that's kind of my advice for Google. And so great question. It's just a matter of, you got to keep up with Google and their changes. And it's frustrating as a consumer because you just feel like when you get into a Google product, like it may not be there in a couple months or it may be completely different in a couple months. And I think that we're seeing that in a big way with Google Photos, although I am sticking to it because I still think it is the best photo solution out there and I still love it. I'm just really trying to stay under that 2 terabytes of storage because I don't want to go over that. All right, speaking of Google, let me just talk about this because I just talked about the speaker. They have a new guest mode on the Google devices, which are the Google smart displays and also the smart speakers. So this is a smart little thing that you can do. So you can say, hey, G, turn on guest mode, and anything you say to your Google assistant will not be saved to your account history. And so, you know, why would you need this? Well, maybe you have guests over and you don't want them accessing your personal information or whatever they ask Google. You don't want that to be saved into your account history, ruining your personalized recommendations. So with guest mode, you can enjoy features like you can ask questions, you can control smart home devices, which I'm not sure how that's possible. You can set timers and play music, but your device won't show personal results like your calendar entries or contacts until you turn the mode off. Once you have this mode on, your device has a special chime and you'll see a guest icon on the display. Let me try this. Hey, Google, turn on guest mode.
Guest mode's on.
Okay, so now it says guest mode's on. So let me ask a question. Hey, Google, what time is it in Tokyo? And it's thinking. It's thinking really hard. That's not that tough of a question, is it? Oh, that's a... I don't think it likes guest mode. It's really thinking. All right, well, that didn't really work. Now my...
The time in Tokyo, Japan, is 3:45 a.m. on Saturday.
Okay.
And by the way, to hear about your upcoming events, just say, what's in my calendar?
Oh, yeah, that's the new thing, because it these assistants are getting so interesting with, like, they throw something in at the end of your question or your answer, I should say, so that you continue to, like, interact with them. It's like, hey, we know you just asked the weather, but by the way, did you know you can order great food from Panda Express? It's really tasty. And it's like, you can see where they're going with this. There will be ads at the end of the answers soon enough when they can figure out how to do this without totally alienating everyone. But mark my words, that is what's coming with all of these assistants with these smart speakers. Mark my words. January 15th, 2021. Well, I think that what it should do is it should have some sort of visual indication on the speaker that you're in guest mode. And also, before it gives your answer, it should give you some sort of chime. Because now I'm going to forget that this is in guest mode. And I guess maybe if I ask something personal, it would say, oh, sorry, you're in guest mode. I can't do that. But anyway, so that's Hey G, turn on guest mode. And then if you want to turn it off, Hey G, turn off guest mode. All right, let's see another question. Shanna and Bob. Hey, Rich, what's a safe place to copy my Facebook memories, photos, and videos? Not Google or any large tech companies. Private and safe. Free would be great. Should I transfer to an external hard drive? What cord would I need with an iPhone 11? Thank you so much. I value your advice. I hope you and your family have a happy new year. Well, Shanna, free is going to be really tough because there's really no free place that I know of anymore that can just let you store an unlimited amount of things. Yes, a lot of these are free for up to a certain amount, but not for everything. And most of the free storage options are going to be from the big tech companies, like, say, a Dropbox or a OneDrive or, let's see, what's the other one? Google Photos. Yeah. So any of these products you're probably going to have to pay for. But you said an external hard drive. An external hard drive is fine. So I think that would work. But I think a better solution would be something like an EBI, IBI. And this is from SanDisk, and it's kind of a hard drive that's connected to the internet. And the beauty of this is that it has the right software to help you automatically transfer your Facebook memory. So all of the stuff from Facebook you can transfer onto that hard drive, and it will do it automatically and ongoing. So that's number one. That's, I think it's like $100, $200, something like that. So that would be number one, and there's no ongoing fees, and it is private, like you said, and it is safe because nothing goes up to the cloud. It's stored in your home. Now, the downside to that is that if you delete or something gets, you know, messed up or corrupted with this EBI, you've lost all of your photos. So the other thing you can do on Facebook, they have a Facebook data transfer tool. I forget what it's called. Let's see. What is it called? Facebook data portability tool, I think it's called. And when you go there, you can transfer your stuff out of Facebook into a lot of other services. So you can just, it's called the photo transfer tool. So if you go to facebook.com/DTP, facebook.com/DTP, and you go in there and you can see what you want to transfer, photos, videos, and choose a destination. Right now the destinations are Koofer, which I think is a European thing, Backblaze B2, Dropbox, and Google Photos, and it will transfer them directly to those places. And so that saves you a little bit of time and effort because it's much easier just to transfer them, you know, right there. And Yeah, that's what I would do. All right. And the hard drive is a good option, but it's just a little bit more manual. So instead of the destination, you would just kind of download your information directly and then throw it onto the hard drive. You can do that. That's fine. It's simple. It's easy. You just have to be a little bit more hands-on. But there you go. That's what I would do. All right. Netflix, according to 9to5Mac via iPhone Soft, says that they are going to be potentially testing spatial audio on the iPad and iPhone. And apparently Netflix has been testing this since December. Now, if you're not familiar with spatial audio support, this is on the AirPods Pro and the AirPods Max, also known as kind of like 3D audio. This is going to be the next big thing with all the headphones are going to have this. But the reason I bring you this story is because when I was up in Washington, I actually watched my first movie with the AirPods in. Normally, I would not watch a movie with AirPods in, right? If I'm watching on my iPad, I would just kind of watch it with the speaker. But I was talking to Brian. Was it Brian? No, I was talking to Justine, and she was saying how great the spatial audio was. She was like, you got to check out Mandalorian with spatial audio. And I said, oh, okay. I would never think to wear my AirPods, you know, with that, while I'm watching in like my hotel room. And sure enough, I fired up a movie on Hulu that had the spatial audio, or I guess it sounded like it did. It was pretty phenomenal. I'm pretty sure it had the spatial audio because it sounded amazing, and it literally, you could hear the people talking, and wherever you move the iPad, it would sound like that's where the audio was coming from. So I was impressed, and that's why I tell you this story, because with Netflix, this is really, really cool stuff. And now I'm like all about the spatial audio. The movie I watched, by the way, was called Bombshell. It was kind of that Roger Ailes story. It took me a while, you know, in the news business, I wanted to see that. It took me a while to watch it, but I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was well done. I thought seeing the, they had like all the Fox News anchors, you know, it portrayed in the movie, which I don't know how I'd feel if I was, you know, an anchor that was portrayed in a movie like that. Cause anyway, but it was a good little movie. I thought it was pretty well done, and wow, very, very interesting, especially given the current climate of what has progressed since that movie came along probably a year ago or two. So, man, they didn't even realize it. They were just at the beginning of some of the wackiness we've seen in the past year. All right, let's see. Should we do another question? Let's do another question from the podcast page, richontech.tv/podcast. Here we go.
Hey, Rich, this is Jim from Arizona. I'd like to put some geotag information on some old digital photos. And I was wondering if you had an application that you could recommend for either Windows or an iOS device. Thank you.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Okay, well, let's see. On iOS, I would think that you could, can you not add information to a picture once it's taken? If you swipe up, that's kind of interesting. Oh, okay. Let's see. Let me see this. So if I have my picture here, I swipe up, they don't allow you to edit, huh? You can see where the picture was taken, but you can't edit. Wow. That's interesting. Okay. Now let me try that same thing on a Samsung. Let me go into a photo gallery and I'm going to swipe up. And it says location. Let's just press edit. Details, edit. You can remove the location, but I don't see the ability to. Oh, yep. And then you can add location. Yep. Okay. So on Android, it seems a lot easier to do this, but I'm sure on iOS, there's some apps. I have not tested these apps, but I'm sure there are some apps. Now, I also know on Facebook Photos, Google Photos, Jim, this might be a way to do it. You take a picture in Google Photos, you upload it there, and you can sync it to your phone, and you can edit the location data there. And I've done that for some of my photos. As for a standalone app, I would think on the Mac side of things, the Photos app, obviously you can add data. But I would think, doesn't Windows Photos just have like a, don't they have like a photo app built into Windows? So Microsoft Photos, can't you just use that to just say edit the data and just edit the GPS data? Those are the places that I would look and try and, you know, see if you can do it. I don't have, I don't have a Windows PC handy right now. I mean, I could try my kids. He has Windows, so I can see if I can do it on there. But I was not prepared for your question. So, but those are the places I would look at. But I'm sure the only thing I would do is just be very careful about, you know, downloading random apps to let you add. So if I would look Window, EXIF, Editor, it looks like there's a whole bunch of apps that you can do that. It looks like Microsoft Photos has it. Okay. Even 6 free tools to change. Looks like there's a lot of tools that will let you do it. If you have a bunch of photos that you want to do it with, it looks like they have a bunch for Windows that make it easy to change a whole bunch at once. But just be careful because these are your photos, and I would always have a backup before you change anything too drastically because you don't want to mess around with that kind of stuff. But good question, Jim. Thanks for listening to the show and submitting your question at richontech.tv/podcast. All right, quick story here. Google completed its Fitbit acquisition, which I know a lot of people are kind of weary about because, oh, here's another big company gobbling up a company that was independent, and now what's going to happen to all of our data? So Fitbit has 29 million users. I hope that they use this acquisition to actually make a product that rivals the Apple Watch, because right now we do not have that. And we need that on the Android side. So Google says that Fitbit's user health and wellness data will not be used for Google Ads, and this data will be separated from other Google Ads data. They also say they will maintain access to Android APIs, which means that fitness trackers and smartwatches will still be able to interoperate with Android smartphones. That's nice. So they're not going to close off other wearables from working with Android. And they say they'll allow Fitbit to continue working with third-party services. That's also nice. They say they will hopefully, the synergy will drive more competition in wearables and make the next generation of devices better and more affordable. Let's hope that everything you're saying here, Google, is true and remains true. Because here's what happens with a lot of these big companies. They put this out there January 14th, 2021. And then what happens in 2 years when everyone forgets? They slowly but surely close things off, change things, and go against what they originally said. Let's hope that does not happen here. Let's just hope that Google builds an amazing smartwatch that works with, potentially iOS, but, you know, that's kind of tricky, and Android, and just continues to be good. And we see more competition with the Android side of things. And let's just hope that they don't just close everything up, use your fitness data for ads, and, you know, go against everything that they said. Let's just hope that doesn't happen. So, all right, final question before we go here. This is from George, also via my pod page. So that's also on the new podcast page is pretty amazing. So if you just go to richontech.tv/podcast, there's so many things you can do here. You can listen to the latest episode. You can subscribe using all the different methods. You can also leave that voicemail as well. And there used to be a way, okay, well, I guess I have to pay if I want the contact stuff to still be in there. You used to be able to leave a message there, like a written message, but I guess that's only on the paid. So I signed up for this thing called PodPage, and they have a free service and also a paid service. And it looks like my free trial dropped off, and there was a lot of features that are no longer available here, but okay, I may have to look into subscribing because I like the fact that you can just go there and leave a message like George did. But anyway, George's message said, you can still email me hello@richontech.tv or go to richontech.tv. And at the bottom, there is an email form that you can use, a little link to my email. George said, hey, Rich, I was in Sweden 6 years ago and every restaurant would bring a credit card reader to the table, so my card never left my sight. Why has the U.S. been so slow to adopt this technology? The answer, George, is money. Restaurants just don't want to pay for the added expense of having these little credit card readers that you can bring to your table. The good news is, because of the pandemic, for a while when restaurants were actually open, we did see more adoption of this because they would finish the bill right at your table, or you could tap right at your table. I do expect to see more of this coming to the U.S. now that, but these companies are on a cycle. Like, you know, if you're at like a CBK or something, I think actually CBK was the one that I was at the other day back when my wife and I went to dinner or lunch the last day before LA shut down everything again. We went out to lunch outside, and I do believe that I think they brought a credit card reader to my table. I think they did. Maybe that was somewhere else. But anyway, I think we're going to see more restaurants do this, but you're right, George. In the rest of the world, this has been the standard for many, many, many decades, and I don't know why it has been just so painfully slow in the U.S. Why does our credit card need to leave our hands, go into the hands of a server, and then into some back room somewhere where who knows what happens? And I'm not saying that every server is, you know, snapping a picture of these things, but it could happen, and there is that opportunity. And why not? And I also just like the idea that I can sit there and see, you know, in a post-COVID society, you know, when we're actually touching things again, but I can, you know, tap my phone to this little device and then it says, hey, how much tip do you want to do? Do you want to do 15%, 20%, 25%, whatever? And it's all calculated for me and it's all really nice. And there's no like weird secondary receipt and all this weird stuff that we do that just makes no sense. I 100% agree, George. It should be a machine that they bring to your table and it works that way. That's the ideal. And yes, all over Europe when you travel there or if you travel to Asia, this is the standard and it's so cool. And I absolutely, absolutely love it. And let's hope we see it here in the U.S. All right, that music means it is the end of the show. If you would like to submit a question for me to answer, just go to richontech.tv. Hit the email button at the bottom of the page. I'd also like it if you would rate and review this podcast to help other people discover it. Just go to iTunes or, you know, whatever your preferred way of listening and just look for the review button. That really does help. You can find me at Rich on Tech. That's me on all the social media networks. My name is Rich DeMiro. Thank you so much for listening and have a fantastic day. I will talk to you real soon. Take care.